Welcome to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. I'm Daniela, and this podcast is about my personal and also about a lot of other people's enthusiasm for art. Art can touch on all parts of life, and therefore we talk about all parts of life. I hope to get you on board and to tell you interesting stories you enjoy listening to. For our international listeners, the podcast will be held mostly in English. We're recording via the internet, so please excuse any glitches in sound quality. Episode 49, recorded November 18, 2021. My guest today is Anis Reimann, artist, wife, mother, and free spirit, who is also known as Max for her friends. Anis has already lived many lives, had many different jobs, but was always drawn to art. In her late 40s, she decided to study art and was accepted to enroll at the acclaimed Kunstakademie Düsseldorf. Until January 23, 2022, her works are on view in the group show Attempts to be Many at the Filara Collection in Düsseldorf. And there's also a short interview with Anis in the WDR Mediathek Westart from November 13, 2021, to which I will put a link in the show notes. And last but not least, I'm very happy that Anis will be collaborating with Van Horn, my gallery, for exhibitions and projects in the future. Hi, Max. Great to have you.
Hi, Dan. Thank you for having me.
Max, I mean, I have a lot of questions. And as you will be joining the gallery now, I really like to learn more about you. And this is why I want to start from the beginning. And there's some private information we share. We met in the early 80s when we were like 15, 16 years old in the Altstadt in Düsseldorf, the old part of town where the Ratinger Hof and some other pubs and clubs were like the living room for us kids.
Yes.
And at that time, nobody really cared where one came from, what background they had. Sometimes we even didn't know each other's real names. Important was only that one was there, that you were part of the scene. So on one hand, we know each other in a way, but still I don't know much about you. And this is why I would like to ask you if you could go a bit back in time and first tell me about your background, your family and your upbringing before we dive into how art came into your life.
Yeah, that's funny how we met, but I go back in my early, early life. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in Duisburg the first 5 years of my life in a very simple, very mixed neighborhood surrounded by Thyssen and Krupp, very industrial, blast furnaces and chimneys directly opposite the König Pilsner brewery. I've been raised by my grandmother, a school teacher's widow, whose most beautiful thing was to leave through books with me about exotic countries after all the necessary tasks of the day were laid down. And she spread newspapers around a table, me on one side, she peeling vegetables on the other side. And besides, she pointed to letters or figures that I was supposed to draw.
Oh, she made you draw?
Yes, she made me draw, but very secretly.
She encouraged you to draw?
Absolutely, yes. She was someone, her leitmotif, I would say, was always, there's no thing impossible. She always said it. And she and me, we were alone. So we had a lot of time together and did those beautiful things. She's also a self-taught pianist, or she made a driver's license for me when she raised me up.
Oh, so she was really a role model.
Yeah, that's the thing, because we were alone. There were no men around. And so I had a very, very strong role model.
In your grandma?
Yes, I have.
So what was about your mom?
My mom, she was working. And, you know, in these times in the 60s, she met my stepfather and they first started to make a living. And then after 5 years, they said, okay, now come on, come to Düsseldorf, go to schools, go to better schools. And so I've been raised in the suburbs of Düsseldorf when I was six.
Oh, okay. But the opening for art was through a grandma who encouraged you to draw. And today we would say that you are Afro-German.
Yes.
And your mom was German and your father a man from West Africa.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And your grandma actually an East Prussian woman. So probably quite like an interesting mix. And you yourself say that you are black and white.
Yes.
And how did you deal with this family story and you being perceived as a black girl and later woman? And this discussion changed so much in the past year. So when we met in the 80s, we didn't even talk about it. And now it's like a big part of the public discussion.
Yeah, it's a bit, for me, sometimes it's a bit strange because I never thought about it that special because it was always in my life, obviously. And yes, I'm raised in a mostly white society. I was very lucky that there weren't so much discrimination. So I was taught to think open and I lived very privileged. And my father, my stepfather, he was a journalist and was portraying stars and artists in the 60s and 70s. Sometimes he was just going to an artist in Paris, like Giacometti, knocked on his door and asked for, can I make some photos with you? And he said, yes, okay. Because in these times, there weren't managers or assistants or something that stopped someone. So, and my mother, she was working for a big airline. So it was very comfortable for us to travel a lot, even especially for my father to go around and meet artists. And me, I was always like a little package on site and had thick multicolored felt tip pens and a bunch of papers. And my parents were very cinephile and they collected strange things like, you know, ex-voto or West African handcuffs. And I found literature in our corners like the Kopfkissentuch of the Dame Sei Shonagan, Japanese folk tales or whatever. I had a lot of things to admire and I was very curious and I also needed it because it was not that easy. I mean, the relationship between my parents were very strong and but also very weird. And so I built up my own little fantasy world.
Yeah, in this special kind of teenage time we shared, that actually, in a way, it was a dangerous time.
Yes, absolutely.
But it was also like great freedom, unconditional yes. acceptance, or almost exhilaration.
Big solidarity. I mean, we were cruising also through the gay bars in this town, the Blue Mouse or mm-hmm. the Rattinger Hof. I just remember always cruising through the night, meeting strange people, having big yes. solidarity, but on a scale that was not that deep, personal. I mean, we didn't know the biography of each other.
Not at all.
No.
And you never asked also. It was just like you just took the people, they were there, okay.
It was the night that was interesting and the...
Yeah. It was the night.
The fun and the adventures that happened in these nights.
It was children of the night. But I mean, this made a certain kind of freedom and an escape from our biographies,
absolutely.
From our families. That was probably the important thing, to escape from the biography,
yes.
to just invent yourself.
Yes. In a way, it was absolutely disturbing because...
Yeah, it was.
There was so many time afterwards that I had to come back to my what I want to and what I can and what are my talents. But in these days, it was very essential that we had each other and these nights. And yeah, in a way, it was dangerous. But on the other hand, it was also very helpful because it was so much fun and fulfilled so many dreams. And I had so many possibilities to meet strange people and to learn from them, even from their faults.
Yes.
So I think it was very, very good. Yeah.
Did in that time, did your grandma still play a role?
Yeah, but I expelled everybody of my family in these times because I was very angry about them and I felt very alone. So I didn't want to see her because it was also very hurtful for me and for her mm-hmm. also, because in these times you don't know what to say and you don't know about you and what you want. You just want to live and go into other things than your family is.
Mm-hmm. Just in this recent interview with Westart, you also said that you're very often very angry. Is that still going back to that time, or are there other sources of anger?
I have learned that there were things I forgot. Luckily, I forgot. And every now and then they come back and they give me also the strength and the power. I feel it like that, to do the things I do. But on the other hand, it gives me also some things I have to come over. But now it's the time in my age I can reflect and I know me much better. It's flooding into my art and also gives me, yeah, kind of peace.
Mm-hmm. To make the art?
Yes. The art was my anchor. The way to go into my works, into these fantasy worlds, into these forms and figures and portraits and personalities, that gives me the strength and also the peace I needed. And I learned to overcome my angers with that.
Okay, because you also said that with you, it's always about self-empowerment.
Yes.
About manifold ways to express yourself, diversity. And actually, you did draw very early and you never really stopped making your own work or art, but you didn't go directly into art.
No, I even didn't talk about it. I never talked to anyone specially about it. I just did it and I always had it around me. I always made it, but it was mine and I never thought about, because I had this weird situation with my mother when I was a teenager, and I thought about what will I do when I grew up, and I said, yeah, I think I will be an actor or an artist, a visual artist, and she said, no, come on, there is no black artist in Germany.
That is what she said?
She didn't want to harm me. I mean,
she wanted to protect you.
Yes, she wanted to protect me. And on the other hand, she also, you know, these people that they don't follow their dreams, they stop in one point and say, no, I won't get it or whatever. And I always had this thing from my grandmother in my head, you know, no, it's not impossible. But you need a bit resilience and you need to grow up to recognize who you are and what you are able to. And then, yeah, you can get it if you want to, I think. And the funny thing was she said this. And so my big, big journey and adventure through many jobs and many second chance education started.
I know that you studied interior architecture and you even got a grade.
Yes.
As engineer. I mean, that's quite impressive.
But before it was, you know, stopping the high school in the 10th class, then I started an apprenticeship as a hairstylist and worked as a makeup artist afterwards because I didn't know what to do. And I thought this will be a good way to earn money. In a way, it was when I was on holidays and had no money anymore in Mykonos or Wales. I just started to cut hair and came back with money from my holidays. It was very, very nice.
So you really learned
yes,
it?
Yes, I really learned
that
it.
That was a real apprenticeship.
At Karin Tänzer's place, then at the Kö. It was very famous in the 80s. Then I started to think about what will I do next, because I wasn't that satisfied with that job.
Mm-hmm.
And I did an internship as bookbinder, started an apprenticeship as carpenter and restorer. Then I fell in love with the guy in the circus.
What did you do in the circus?
Yes, I started to work as a props manager in the garderobe at Circus Roncalli. Don't remember which year it was, but it was not that long. I wanted to travel the next year, but when we were in the winter camp in Cologne, I fell in love with a guy in Düsseldorf again, so I had to go back.
Okay, so you split with the circus.
Yes, I split with the circus and came back to Düsseldorf. And then I did have a second chance education. And afterwards, we're going, because of love, going to Rheinland-Pfalz and studied interior architecture and made that engineer, yes.
And did you ever work in that field?
Yeah, in a way, because when I came back to Düsseldorf, funnily, it was on the Ratinger Straße again. I met an old pal and she asked me if I would be able to work as a product designer at a very well-known consumer goods company, Gunter Lambert. And I wasn't that sure, but I needed the money. So I said yes. And it was one of the very good times in my life because I learned so many things from Gunter. And he taught me to handle materials, whatever materials. He was very inventive in searching old historical forms and bring it into a contemporary, very desirable goods. So it was a very nice and very good time to learn. Yes.
And in all these years, you still did, like in a parallel life, always your own work?
Always. Always. I always did collaging. I always did painting in a way. Just more sketches. And I had a favor for building or creating unusable machines. That was the thing. So, and I always could do this when I came home or in the morning or on weekends.
Yeah, art is always an unusable machine.
Yes, in a way. But I never saw it like this.
Yeah. And what made you then decide, I mean, you're a late bloomer at that quite late age to say, okay, I'm really going to give it again a try. I'll jump in and study art.
Yes. I met the right guy. I have two beautiful sons. And they were in an age, the sons. Suddenly I had this thing, what I have always had. It's like, I'm an artist. Mm-hmm. I want to do it. And now if no one is believing that, that's okay for me. But I had to prove myself in a way. Mm-hmm. Maybe because of the phrase of my mother, you know. I don't know. But there's something and it itches me. And so I was going to the academy and showed my works in a class and to my future professor then. And they said, yeah, sure, come do. You're an artist. So and then I started to. And I had, I think it was now 8 years with Thomas Grünfeld. And he inspired me. It was funny because it was a good directly understanding. I mean, before I looked at the professors and I've seen some I liked to show my work to, but he was the one. I met all the things I've already done in a way. And he is doing it in a totally another way. I mean, I don't want to compare. It was such a good understanding. He understands so many things and he's able to bring your skills out of you. That's fantastic. So it was very enlightened.
When a professor can do that, that is really great. I was a late student. I was 28. Mm-mm. You know, that was already late because most people, when I studied at the academy, were like between 18 and 20 or 21. And I was 28, which now, from my point of view now, is like, oh, whatever, nothing. You know, I was a kid. But still, when you're like 48, 49 or so, and the others are 20, even if you worked your whole life and did your work your whole life, it does not mean that you are a fully formed artist. You're still a young artist. You still have to learn. You have to discover. That means you have to be super open again. You have, you know, all these things. You have to start all over. How did that work for you?
I think in a way that's one of my super power crafts. I don't know. To be open. To be curious. I mean, that's a thing I never stop. It feels like it will never stop. And the most of the young people there, I mean, were as young as me and as old as me in a way. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Meeting people with the same direction is very fruitful in a way. I mean, I see it like that. Even when you're going into a bar, you know, you have people you want to talk with and the others you don't see. So it's the same on an academy. No problem at all. And yeah, first they looked a bit, you know, oh my God, okay. But they couldn't really see how old I am. they couldn't really see it and they had their doubts, but it was just a few moments and then everything was fine.
Mm.
Even with the professors was no problem at all.
I think that, you know, for each one it's different, and for you as well as for me, it was just like probably the perfect time. Probably we wouldn't have been able to have done it
yes.
with 20, you know?
I couldn't have done it before. I think yeah. so. I had to grow into my nowness. I had to grow into my personality I am today with all the things I did before and learned before and have seen before. So I think that's the thing. Yeah, absolutely. And what I wanted to say here, that's a very good opportunity, is, you know, this thing about young art. I mean, young art, how I understand it, it just means for me, something new or something exciting. Now, there are so many artists, I think they never grew old, even when they died with 100 years, you know?
Yes.
Like Alice Neal or Joachim Bandau. There are so many artists I admire. There is no such thing than age. It's just about what you can say, what you are able to see and what you're able to give, and not what's age, young or old art. Is there someone who's an old artist?
I mean, a good artist, no.
Yes.
Just look at Lawrence Wiener, John Baldessari.
Yes.
Look at all these people that just recently passed away.
Absolutely.
And their work, and even they as personalities were like, super energetic and alive
yes.
until the last moment.
Yes. They influence, and I think that's the thing, you know, it's influencing art. Young art, okay, but, you know, it discriminates so many artists in a way. I don't like it.
Yeah, there are so many criteria that discriminate. People probably should just like throw them out of the window.
Yes.
I mean, I still believe actually in good art. Whatever that is, the thing is, the definition is tricky.
Absolutely.
But, you know, as soon as it's meaningful, energetic, good, all these, then this is, it's probably like young, you know?
Yes, I agree.
So you are now like exactly at the point you're like really starting over.
Yes.
And and tell me a little bit more about your work. What are you doing? What is the drive behind that?
My drive. Yeah, my drive, that's very nice. My drive can be briefly described as layers of meanings. I think that describes it. Sculptural as well as painterly. I think it's an attempt to embody emotions, stories, states, and personalities in every aspect and literally. Mm-hmm. It's about embodiment, I think, yes, about portraits, portraiture of contemporary vibes, and also playing with old knowledge, memories, hints, folk tales, cultural history, and spiced with humor and irony as much as possible. The composition of even in the collage is essence for me,
mm-hmm.
essential, whereby the layers also can very prosaically consist of several meanings for one thing or action.
Mm-hmm. Are you always conscious about this when you do it? Or
no,
is there,
absolutely no. not. That's the funny thing. I don't want to think about it, mm-hmm. even think about it, because it's so special for me that it always happens that way. I needed a long time to be able to describe it like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you thought about that afterwards?
Yeah.
Like you did something, you looked at it and thought like, oh, what is that? What am I doing?
Yeah, not that way. I mean, I have an impression. I have an intention before, mm-hmm. mostly. But meanwhile, the process, I don't think anymore. And sometimes, any artist knows that I change everything or I stop. But there's no thinking about you have to say this or you have to say that. It mm-hmm. just happens. And it's like an organic process. And afterwards, I'm always, even by myself, I look at the sculpture or the painting and I say, oh, wow, okay. What have I done here?
Is that in the process when you get into the flow and you find that peace you were talking about?
Absolutely. I'm just with me and the process, the sculpture or the painting. That's all. Absolutely.
And these ideas that you are not in all works, but you're using a lot of collage and painting and mixed with each other. And I kind of like understood it like this. There are a lot of layers of the sheer material which address the layers of meaning.
Yes, absolutely. Mostly I have some themes. They come again and again. Sometimes I stop. I have one theme that's Sauvage. It's about the wild people. It's German and also, North and East European folk tale about the wild people that, you know, I think it's the same in America. You have this Jedi or people who live in the woods or in caves, and they were existing, and there are stories about it and fairy tales. And nobody knows if this was true, you know, rests of maybe Neanderthalers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I mix it with the projections on dark-skinned people. You know, there are a lot of. And I play with this and I bring it always to a new portraiture. I try to nourish these portraits with cultural and historical origins or with old language and pop culture, and try to bring these natural materials into something that touches and that remembers people on something. It's like dissolution of projections and a tickle in the reptilian brain.
So you kind of like would like to pass by the intellectual judgment and reach people on a more essential level?
Yes, absolutely. I don't like that word, but in these, it's good, like in a primitive way.
I understand primitive in this way, probably more pure and less prejudiced, like more direct.
Yes.
And how does, because I was thinking about the body and the female body, and how does the female body come into play there? Because I think it does in some way.
Yes, absolutely. It's always there.
Because you have a female body or?
It's not only because me. I mean, it's me, absolutely. But it's, I don't know, I'm touched by women. I like women. I like women a lot. And I had the luck to grow up with the strong women. And so I never had this question that we are able to handle life or to handle things or hard things or rough times. There were no question at all. And I was always wondering why women have this, I mean, a lot of women have this ability to do all these things, to manage all their lives and the lives of the kids and the lives of the husbands, and but always have this patriarchal sword above them.
Yes, and are considered to be weak, which is really a joke.
Absolutely.
I think I read it somewhere on Instagram or so, I don't remember, but there was one woman who said, you know, that even to say strong woman is kind of like implicating that actually like a normal woman is weak.
Yes.
So you have to say strong woman, but actually, you know, now my storytelling, what I feel is like you say woman and I think of strength.
Yes.
I don't think of weakness when I think of woman.
No, absolutely. That's right. Because there is so many things I only see. I say it like this. My mother sometimes was a bit, I think, too much in this thing, but she always showed me, you know, she was the one who put up the tools or took the hammer to pull a nail into the wall. You know, my father had the role of the artistic, creative weirdo in the back of the bureau.
That was your stepfather.
It was my stepfather, yes.
Just like out of curiosity, did you ever meet your biological
father? Yeah, it was a very, very short time. It took 20 years ago, I had this thing, I have to search for him. I just had some informations of my mother. So I started a search. It was over 7 years. But suddenly I got a letter in French. No, it was in English from my biological father with the telephone number. I mean, it was, we had half a year to phone, and it was half year of my life that was so special because I never saw him before. I mean, I had a weird remembrance when I was a baby that a dark-skinned man was looking into my baby bed. I saw him from down and he was looking over me. But that was the only time, and he remembered this situation. So we were talking half a year, and I think he was a presidential, how you call it in English? Conseiller de président is a Präsidentschaftsberater.
Advisor of the president.
Of the first democratic voted president in Guinea. And I think there's a big family also in Conakry, but I only searched for my father. And yeah, I was very shocked about the news because he was a politician and he was very known in his country. And then suddenly he died right a few days before I wanted to go there to meet him the first time in my life. And it was so shocking for me that I stopped to think about it, I think for 2 years, 3 years or something like that, because I really was so sad about it because he was such a nice and calm and yeah, he was such a good man. I mean, but it was just phoning, yeah. So it was telephoning. So it was very hard for me to think about it. And I always had this thoughts in my mind that I was too late to be interested in my biological father, but there were so many things in my life I had to solve before. So that's the reason why.
Oh, yeah. And it's also not the child's responsibility to look for the parents. It's the other way around.
Absolutely. That's what I think also.
So now you're here after all this really like story with so many spirals, and then you come back to some points and then it starts again. And now you're here, you finished your studies, you work as an artist, and you're in your mid 50s, you're a really young artist. I mean, no, let's not say young, let's say energetic, powerful artist. And what is your vision for the coming years?
I'm really glad that we met each other, because I think I have the chance to go further on, because I had the imagination about myself that I, you know, it was lockdown and I started to paint again after years, because I only worked as a sculptor before in the studies. And I started to paint again. Now suddenly I have much, much more input and output. So I think I have to develop myself to the next step. And I really appreciate the feedback I get momentarily. It's really, wow. I take this all with me, this energy, and I think I will develop into something. Me, I don't even see directly now, but I think it will be very good. I think so.
Oh, yeah, I think so. You will develop into something really great. Yeah.
But I think I have to concentrate, you know, I have to concentrate on these things that I suddenly recognize into myself newly. So it gives me strength that you saw it and a lot of other people. And I will do my very best.
I completely trust in you and your process. So, Max, if there's anything you think like, oh, yeah, people should know this about me, you can say it now, because otherwise I would just say thank you so much.
No, I think people see, even when I speak, I know people hear enough of me. I think it's okay. I thank you. It was very nice.
For more information on Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast, follow us on Instagram at Voices on Art and at van_horn_Düsseldorf. Visit our website van-horn.net and subscribe to Voices on Art on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the platform of your choice. Thank you for listening to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. Stay tuned and connect.